Welcome back to Dr. Drill's Making Motivation podcast, where it is our mission to honor interesting and authentic people to tell their motivating stories. Check it out yourself before you wreck yourself, my friends. This afternoon, I've got a good friend of mine, Alfred Barry, a.k.a. the Italian Tank, with us. He's going to tell the story of his life and service. How you doing there, Tank?
Hoorah!
Hoorah, devil dog. What's going on? For the viewer, Al and I, we served together in 1st Battalion, 6th Marines, in an infantry battalion. What platoon were you in there, Alfred?
The third herd.
The third herd, yeah, baby.
We were AAV unit, which for some people in civilian life don't know, AAV is a amphibious assault vehicle, which goes on land and sea, travel through the oceans and hit the land, holds a unit in there, and we all come out running and attack and get in formations. Hell of a time.
I'm going to do a little screen share, Al. I'm going to do a little screen share. So all right. Just talk us through the AAVs. We called them Amtraks for short. So here we go. And you can give a little show and tell. We'll consider this.
All right.
You let us know what's going on in these photos. So let's start here. What are we looking at, Al?
That right here, we're looking at the ass end of the ship. We're on the USS Ponce, and AAV units is coming off the back end of the ship to go out to the ocean. And it's usually in a formation of three AAVs, holds a whole battalion in them, or the whole platoon, I should say, spread out into three Amtraks. And that's about it on that side, the exiting or entering the ship.
Now, what is this area called that this AAV is in?
I don't recall offhand. I want to say squad bay or something.
Is that the well deck?
The well deck, yeah.
And what is going on out here? So this is the ship, and why is there water in here?
Yeah, because as they're opening the doors to let us out or come in, water is going to enter from the ocean.
And then we splash out into the whatever body
water is, right? Yeah, or either splashing out or coming in, either one.
Now, what is it like to be riding around in those things?
It's like you're in a tin, squashed in a tin can, breathing in all kinds of fumes and gas and all kinds of crap.
Farts?
What's that?
Any farts?
Oh, yeah, plenty.
Plenty of farts circulating in there.
Oh, yeah. Especially mine.
So now this is you. This is Alfred Barry. What are you posing in front of there, Al?
Well, it was a little bridge in Okinawa. I mean, I seem to have a lot of Liberty service there because after leaving Okinawa, we were coming back home, and I only had a couple of weeks left in the Marine Corps. So I had a lot of free liberty to walk around and do all kinds of tours and stuff. So that was just a pretty bridge with the water. Just wanted to get a photo of that being in Okinawa.
Was that on base or was that out and beyond?
Out and beyond, yeah. I always got off base. I don't know how, but they never bothered me.
Yeah, they had those bus shuttles and stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I would like to have explored more, you know. It seemed like a pretty cool place.
Yeah. Did you ever do the mud bath? What do they call it? Oh, it's called like the Mama-san bathhouse? Bathhouse, yeah.
I never did do that, man. I never did get to do that. You?
Yeah, no, I did it. It was good.
What does it entail?
Like when you first walk in, you walk into a a pool that's about waist deep, and you just stand there, and the mama-san, she's like washing you up, she brushes your teeth, she scrubs you all down, and then you go into another pool where you just wash everything off, and then you're waiting to get a massage done. And then in between, like, you're waiting probably a couple hours because a bunch of guys are getting a massage. So you could, like, order food and snacks and all that, or eat at a restaurant that was there. So it's kind of casual. And then when you get the massage, then, of course, they ask you, you know, you want a happy ending with it. But I didn't get that far.
Dude, I never did that. I should have done that. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, it was cheap too. It was only like $50. I did it just to try it out. It was cool. Like, you just hang out all day and shit, and mama son's coming around doing whatever you want.
That's yeah. Like time well spent right there.
Yeah, I spent like a whole day there.
I remember I didn't ever make it down to the banana shows either.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like one of the tours that they had when we were in Okinawa, and I, like I said, I had a lot of free time, so I was like, shit, all right, I'll sign up for that, check it out.
What's happening here, Al?
I have to see this picture. Take the glasses off. That's when we were in Italy, and I did a tour with a school, but it was like all Catholic school with like the nuns and stuff, and they needed a translator, and I understood Italian, but I couldn't really speak too much of it, so I kind of tried to translate stuff into English from what they were saying. And they brought like all the kids in, we served them lunch and everything, and they got to see what it was like being on the ship and stuff. And that's then from cool. Yeah, and,
it does seem that's the mess deck, right? That's on the ship.
Yeah, they got to come on and experience what it was like, and they had lunch and stuff. But it was basically a class that was from the Catholic school with the nuns and the priests.
That's pretty cool, dude.
Yeah. And
what's going on here? Is that the back of Air's head?
Yeah.
I know how. Don't ask me how I know what the back of Air's head looks like, but I would.
You can't mistake Wally for anything.
That's true. That's true. So what is happening here? Where are we?
That's in California when we were doing CACS training, and we were getting on the buses to head to Camp Hollywood there, the Hollywood Marine Camp, and we were doing our cactus training there. Train us for the desert, and we did it was all live ammo and everything.
Yeah, that's pretty fierce. CAC stands for, to the viewer, Combined Arms Exercise. And so it's one of the few places in the States where you can go and drop your munitions and the infantry run around, do their thing, get all your vehicles out there, drop bombs, and
play
war, all that stuff. It's a good training.
Yeah. Game. Yeah, we actually lost a guy out there. You remember that?
When the Humvee rolled, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah.
He was in the turret or something like that, and he rolled his Humvee.
Yeah, yeah.
That sucked. So we're going on here, Al?
This is when afterwards when we went to Italy, and there was another tour where if you wanted to go to the Vatican and see the Pope, like give a mass. And I volunteered for that. And after that, I met a couple of girls that were there sitting next to me. And they saw I was a Marine, and they kind of liked me. And it was kind of like a thing. And after the mass, we had like, I guess, 4 hours where we could walk around and tour the Vatican and stuff. So they kind of took me under their wing, and they took me on a couple of trains and a couple of buses, and they kind of toured me all around Italy in the time that I had, and then brought me back to the bus to go back on the ship.
That's a pretty good gig. You might remember, yeah. Remember her name?
I do not, no. Well, there was a couple of them. There was another girl. They were sisters, and I guess they were living there for the summer. They go to Italy every summer. They got family out there, so just happened to kind of hook up with them to where they knew, like, all the sites, you know. So they were taking me to a few sites to check it out and got some pictures and stuff.
Cool. So,
yeah.
Remember, dude, I don't know if we were on the same bus going out there. I don't remember going to Mass, but I do remember the Sistine Chapel and all that. Were you on the bus where, like, the friggin' Force Recon guys, like, were piss drunk and, like, basically commandeered the bus and the chaplain was giving them shit?
No, I don't remember that. I don't think I was on that one.
Yeah. All right. Next. Okay, so now... Describe to me what we're looking at here, Al. Looks like the back of the ship here.
Oh, yeah. That's after we launched from the ship and they were doing their training. The AAVs had to do their training. And I think that's when we were actually sitting off the coast of Kuwait, where we were just waiting for the word to go in, and they told us, you know, to load up with live ammo, and they gave us like an MRE box and said, hey, this is going to be a last letter home for a while. And we were waiting so long, so the AAVs decided to launch out and kind of get ready for their drills or whatever, if we got the word to attack. But, of course, that never came down, and then we were told to stand down after.
Pretty cool.
I remember that shit. We were, like, locked and ready for, like, 12 hours.
I remember these nets here, that, like, a cable nets on the back. I think they call that the fantail.
Mm-hmm.
Where it maybe would catch whatever cargo, or if something that blew off, that could catch that in the fantail. So this is a picture of you and your daughter. Her name is Adrian.
Yeah. Yep. That's the day we were heading to go check out her college. It's crazy how time's flying. She's already about to graduate high school and go right off to college here. And she's going to Keene State here in New Hampshire.
That's awesome. So, what's she thinking of studying?
She's actually taken up film and photography. She wants to direct and do horror films and stuff. So she might be the next Stephen King. I don't know. But she does wonderful. She actually won an award for for the state of New Hampshire, and she did like a short film thing, and it qualified to be on the short film festival, which is going to be shown in the movie theaters all across the states, and she might get an award for that.
That's outstanding, man.
So I mean, that's pretty amazing for, you know, 18-year-old, and she's really coming into her craft, and she's done well, and she won a few scholarships for the film, for doing film and photography, and she just really gets into it. She loves it, so.
I'm glad to hear that, man. I wish her the best of luck. She's beautiful. I remember seeing pictures of her as a little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they grow up quick. You know how that goes. You got two of them yourself.
Yeah, same thing, buddy. Same thing. So
blink your eye and it's like, Christ, what the hell happened? I remember holding her under my arm like a football, you know?
Yeah. So tell us why they call you the Italian tank.
Well, a big reason I kind of picked that name to follow me, I took it from the Rocky movie, from when he did his training and how Mickey would say, you know, you're the tank, you're the Italian tank, you're an unstoppable machine. And to me, in the service, I was a radio man, which at first I didn't like. I mean, it kind of fell right in front of me when we started boot camp and all that. And after boot camp, going to training, Camp Double Dog, everyone would walk past the radio, and all of a sudden we stopped formation, and the radio happened to be right in front of me, and the guy, the drill instructor's like, hey, you pick up that radio. So I picked up the radio, and sure enough, it just stayed with me. And carrying the radio and all the rest of your gear, you know, the shit ain't easy, and it's all heavy.
Big time.
And so I kept up, you know, to me, I took it to heart, and I, you know, did my best with carrying everything and doing my job as a radio man. And I kind of fell into it and loved it afterwards. And I was like the only one they said that always kept up with the lieutenants and everything. Like every time a lieutenant was there, boom, I was right there with the radio and stuff like that. I earned the respect of being the radio man, like towards the end when I was getting ready to get out and they had to train someone else. They went through like four or five people that couldn't do the job that I did.
That's awesome.
So I earned the respect afterwards. They were like, shit, you really carried all this shit and did all this? I'm like, yeah. They're like, you're one tough son of a bitch.
You're the Italian tank, an unstoppable force, dude.
Yeah, all back then. Nowadays, I'm not too sure, but I'm still living, so that's a good thing.
You got that spirit. So here we are. I don't know if the viewers can take in this photo of us. This is probably, 7 years ago, maybe 10. And this is Kratz, Barry, Obi, Rumpler, and Chara in front of the Rocky statue right by the Art Museum in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So it's pretty cool. We all got our dukes up there. So Rocky, Rock. And so the Italian tank, but also there's a professional. You're also in the intro music. That was Stone Cold Steve Austin's intro music. You're a big fan of professional wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, I always love wrestling. I still do.
Who's your favorite wrestlers of all time?
Pretty much Stone Cold. I like Stone Cold. I love Sting. Sting just retired. I like more like the older guys. Today's day and age, I like John Moxley. He's with AEW. I like the tough guys look who like to kick ass and don't take any bullshit, you know?
Yeah. And so you it was your ambition at one point, right, to be a professional wrestler. When you got out of the Marines?
Oh yeah, all during the Marine Corps, I'd watch wrestling. I'd practice some shit with some of the other guys, and that was my goal. Like coming back to Massachusetts, there was a wrestling school called Killer Kowalski, who's a big known wrestler. He retired and he trained wrestlers. Is in Malden, Mass, and that was my goal, was to go to that school and check it out. But unfortunately, as I got out of the Marine Corps, you know, being in the Marine Corps, they pump you with so much Motrin that you don't feel the pain. And then as we got out, I stopped taking that Motrin and naturally, you know, started feeling the pain again. So my back was hurting. Had a couple of broken ribs from doing a bench press competition in Okinawa, which was right before getting out. So I just needed time to heal. So I took a few months off, and then during those few months, I didn't have insurance or a job or anything, so I needed to get started working, and I was like, oh, I'll check out the wrestling stuff after I get kind of settled, getting a job with insurance and all that.
Right.
And so I started as a meat clerk. Within 3 weeks, two, 3 weeks, they're telling me, oh, let's train you to be a meat cutter. I was like, what the hell I know about cutting meat? That's all right. We'll train you. You know, you're a hard worker, this and that. They saw my work ethic and stuff. So they started training me to cut meat, and I was already making really good money. So I was like, yeah, forget the wrestling shit. I'm going to keep cutting meat. So that's what I did, and I loved it after, you know. It was a great job.
That's how long did you do that?
Probably a good 15 years or so, up until longer than that, because my daughter's I'd say almost 20 years, OB, like since getting out of the Marine Corps and since we hooked up and stuff. Yeah, so I'd say about 20 years.
Yeah.
I moved up pretty quick. I became meat manager, and then unfortunately I had a bad thing happen to me. I ended up getting a kidney failure. So I ended up retiring early. I quit cutting meat. And I got put on dialysis, which I do 3 days a week for 5 hours. So sometimes that's why I feel a little weak at times. And it's a job of its own, just going to dialysis and sitting there for the 5 hours. And what they do is, because I don't urinate at all, so they're basically taking all the fluid that I put in within the couple of days of not going to diet. So they remove the fluid and they're cleaning my blood for the 5 hours, which obviously isn't enough, because when you have the kidney, your kidney's working 24/7, and to where I'm only getting a kidney that's working when I go to dialysis for the 5 hours to 3 days a week. So that's kind of where I'm at now. But I look at everything as a positive. I mean, I'm still living. I still live a good life. I do a lot of fun things. I go to a lot of concerts. I go to shows. I try to keep active. And that's the other thing. Thank God to the Veterans Foundation, Ticket Foundation. It's a site that all veterans, they can go on in your area. They have shows and stuff, and you can get tickets pretty cheap. So
yeah, we're gonna plug that, dude. We're gonna plug that and share that with the video, because I know that you pass that on to me, and it can be a great help to people. It's an important benefit. You know, every little bit counts, and so I had long admired all the, you would be going to a new event every week. It seemed like you had something new in the, I'm going to go see this, I'm going to see that, you know, new show or whatever. What are some of the shows that you saw?
Pretty much a lot of rock shows. I've been to a couple of country shows. I mean, I take advantage of, I go to whatever they have tickets on, and if I could make it, I go to them, you know. The summertime, there's times I went to like 3 shows a week.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
No, yeah. No, I loved it. You got to live life, you know. Like I said, God handed me a bad kidney, and I'm struggling, but I don't let that put me down. I live life to the fullest, and I enjoy it.
You do that, and I've taken notice of that. You really seem to live your best life. You have a very positive outlook, and so I think people can benefit from hearing your story. So you mentioned the bench press competition. How much did you have on the bar?
I want to say 275, maybe 300. And I think what happened was my left arm slipped, and the weights came crashing right down on my chest.
Oh.
And yeah, so when I got up, it felt like a broken rib, or maybe a couple broken ribs, because I had a hard time breathing. And when I left the Marine Corps, you know, like how you do your checkout and you go to, you know, the whole thing, and I'm like, no, I'm fine, everything's good, but I was hurting. I just wanted to get the hell out. Yeah. I didn't want them keeping me there another couple of weeks or whatever.
No shit.
So I said, no, I'm good. Everything's fine. And then, like I said, when I got home, I was hurt and I couldn't breathe. I couldn't do much, but after a couple months, I was good.
Wasn't there a tell us about the that fast roping injury?
Oh yeah, that's where I pulled my back and my ankle. That's where my ankles and my back got hurt. We were fast roping, and we were doing fast rope training. And of course, I was a radio man, so lieutenant goes down, and then I'm supposed to go down, and I get the fear of heights kicked into me. And when I get to the edge of the rope, and then the platoon sergeant behind me was like, "You need to go," and he bumped me. He didn't really push me, but he gave me like a bump, and then I ended up going down, and I couldn't grip the rope. I didn't grip it at all, so I free fell a little bit, and then somehow I swung in. I was able to grab the rope, but as I grabbed it wrong, so it kind of burnt right through my glove, and it started burning my hands. So naturally, I let go again, and then that's when I fell. I hit the ground, and everyone was like, "Oh shit, Barry just fell. Barry fell." And I landed like feet first, and then I fell back. And I swear, like, the radios like kind of what broke my fall. I thought the radio went right through me. And I'm after a minute or two, I'm looking around, I'm like, shit, I'm still alive.
That prick 77 didn't feel too good in your thoracic spine, though. Am I right?
No, not at all. And then I don't know if you remember that, like afterwards they were like, "Oh, whoever doesn't make," we were training. And that was the other thing. I think shortly after that, we were supposed to go up again, but I had fallen, so I didn't have to go up the next helo. And the helicopters crashed. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, the next set of people that went up, I guess the wind hit or something. The wind came through and threw them off guard or training or something, and two of the helicopters collided.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, two helicopters ran, and I was like, shit, that would have been me in the helicopter if I didn't fall. And they gave me a break and said, I didn't have to go up the next time.
Did they? Were there fatalities from that?
Yeah, I think four or five people died, they said.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And that was another training exercise where they died. Two helicopters collided. And I was like, shit, that would have been me.
Fucking terrible, dude. Yeah.
And so they cut the training short at that end. And they made us hike back to the barracks, which was like 10 miles. And they were like, "Oh, whoever doesn't make it back to the barracks is going to be standing guard duty, 12 hours on, 12 hours off." And I was like, shit, I just fell. There's no way in hell I can stand for 12 hours. So I made it back to the barracks, a fucking 10-mile hike after falling. And I remember being fucking dead as a doornail when I was crawling back. And after that, I think that's when I remember going, I said, "I'm going to go out and get something to eat. I'm starving." You know, we've been training for days, eating the fucking MREs, which I never really ate much of. So basically, you're out in the field starving. And so I go off base to a Chinese joint. It's supposed to be a buffet place, all you can eat. And I remember sitting there, I started eating. And I guess I ate more than I should have, because the fucking Chinese guy come up to me. He's like, "Hey, you cut off. You need to go. Get out of here." I was like, "What? Like, it's a buffet place." I said, "I'm eating." He goes, "Oh, you eat too much. You need to go." So they cut me off. Fucking Chinese food place.
That's messed up. That was out in Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's messed up. That's false advertising.
Yeah. Well, you know, back then I could put some food away. You know what I mean?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. I remember we used to invade those places when we come out of the field. Well, still a cami paint in our eye sockets and behind our ears and shit, right?
Yeah.
How about the time, let's hit some stories here. Remember when I believe this was you. We were waiting for some trucks out in the woods somewhere, and there was this long rut. It was like all friggin'
full. Yeah, it was like all mud and fucking piss in there and
murky.
All kinds of lurky shit in there.
And then
I decided to entertain everybody. I said, "Hey, give me play some bets that I won't make it all the way. I won't low crawl through all that shit." and sure enough, I jump in the fucking thing, low crawl through the whole fucking thing, get up all wet and muddy and all that shit all over me. The people are just laughing, having a good time, and then sure enough, finally the fucking trucks show up.
I think you did take off your I remember you doing it in like skivvy shorts and
yeah, I took all my shit off, the gear and everything. Yeah,
that was a great memory. What other occasions you got? What other stories you got there, Tank? Could have been boot camp, training, the fleet.
Yeah, I remember a good story after boot camp when we did double dog training. We did the land nav. And at the time, I think I remember two of the other guys that were with me. One was Lance Corporal Pop, or I think he ended up being Sergeant Pop at the end.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember him at all.
Pop, yeah, he's from Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
Real.
So it was him. It was him, myself. I want to say Lance Corporal Beal, and then Jenkins. I don't know if you remember Jenkins and Beal at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was the four of us. We're doing land nav, and sure enough, all four of us, fucking dumb as fuck at land nav, and we got lost. And it was late at night. We were tired of fucking going up and down land nav and trying to find these things or whatever you had to find. And so we just end up sitting in the middle of the field. We're like, they'll come looking for us, because we had no fucking clue where else to go. And so we sit in the middle of the field. We set a little campfire up, and we're just sitting there shooting the shit and sleeping. And finally, it's like early morning, and you hear fucking guns going off and people yelling for us. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, there they are. And it was like literally like 100 feet away from us.
yeah.
We get to them and they're like, where the fuck were you guys? What happened? And we explained to them that, hey, we got lost. We didn't know what else to do. So we just sat down. And they said, oh, we got worried, like fucking alligators or something got a hold of you guys. And then we're like, no. And then we're like, oh, we set a fire up to keep warm. And you set a fire up, blah, blah, blah. So we all got in trouble. And we ended up doing chow duty for like 2 weeks or something like that after that.
So that was in MCT or SOI then?
Yeah, SOI, yeah. Where the whole fucking battalion's out there looking for us because we never came back from fucking land nav.
Land nav is very humbling, man.
I hated doing that shit. I always got lost. But sure enough, I was lucky enough to be with three other people who were just as dumb as me. We couldn't figure the land nav out.
some people have it. It seemed like some people had an instinct about it. Like I remember... I was placed on a company land nav team. They had these like handheld GPSs that were like, it looked like the size of a lunchbox or something like that.
Yeah.
Big, and you stick your hand through the little thing in the back, and then we could use those to at least find our position if we got lost. But I mean, I remember like hundreds of guys, hundreds of Marines in our trail, you know, behind us in the middle of the night and trying to find, you know, make sure that we were heading in the right direction to the objective. And it was really, really humbling. I got lost my share of times as well.
Yeah.
But
it's I mean, come to find out now, like afterwards, we're like, oh, all we had to do was walk maybe 300 yards in one area and you'd find a box.
Yeah.
But we didn't know that then. They didn't tell us that.
No.
It just seemed like we'd walk around in fucking circles. And we couldn't find we couldn't find shit, so finally we're like, fuck it, let's just sit here. And the battalion be looking for us, we hope. And sure enough, they were in the morning.
Yeah. What else? So what was third herd like? Chain of command.
Third herd was real good. We went through a couple of head sergeants and stuff, but what the hell's the name now?
give me a hint. I'll help you out if I can.
The last sergeant we had when we went to Okinawa, and then he ended up going into he was good friends with Sergeant Barry.
Yeah, Baker.
Baker, yeah, Sergeant Baker. When we got him, he was great. He was like a father I never had. He taught me a lot of stuff. I was a little older than most of the other guys because I had joined the Marine Corps later than usual.
Right.
I was like 23 when I joined. And most of the guys, when I went through boot camp, they were like just out of high school. So it was a little bit of an age difference. And he talked to me like being like a mentor or a leader to some of the other guys that were a lot younger, trying to keep them on a straight and narrow instead of going right out to, you know, drinking right away because they never had alcohol before. And to where I was a little older and already experienced, you know, all the drinking shit. So.
Yeah, it was a lot of that, man.
Yeah. But like I said, we had a good platoon and they had their moments, but they knew when to and when not to. But a big part of that is we had good leadership with Sergeant Baker. And like I said, he saw that I was a little older, so he would talk to me a lot about, you know, keeping the platoon in order and stuff. So we had good characters, good leadership, and everyone seemed to listen pretty well.
Outstanding. Who were your roommates?
At the time, I had a younger guy called Phillips. Lance Corporal Phillips.
Tall.
And, who?
Tall, fair-haired?
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah. Him. Yeah. And then, some of the other guys that I was close with, like Jenkins would be the next room over. I think Sergeant Bartimus had his own room because he was a sergeant at the time.
Yeah, he was a good dude.
Yeah.
He later went on to join, he was a Marine Raider. He was an officer, right?
Yeah, he's done a lot. He just actually physically retired, I think, like 5 years ago.
Okay.
He lives down in Florida, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to catch up with Bartimus. Good dude. Jenkins, good dude as well.
Yeah, everyone is fairly good, you know what I mean? Lance Corporal Hack, he was good. He was part of our platoon probably for a couple of years, and then he got out.
Yeah. And then you had your New Englander compadre there, Air.
Yeah, Wally Air.
What's he like?
Yeah, he was good. He was a funny dude. Always playing jokes. Always hitting on the girls when we go out.
Forget it, man. That dude is a player, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's mellowed out quite a bit, though. He's married now, and he lives up in Maine. Lives probably like 2 hours from me.
Okay.
Yeah, I try to keep pace with him sometimes. I'll throw him a line here and there. We had lunch and stuff probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago. We kind of met in the middle and spent a good time, you know, going catching up with stuff and had a good lunch.
That's outstanding. Yeah, he's a great guy. I try to get him on here. He's a little tough to pin down. I don't know him.
Yeah, he is. He's a little off network. He doesn't have the network capability out there. He's out in the middle of nowhere.
Is he?
Yeah. Hey. He's kind of off. He's kind of off grid. It's like either catch him or you don't catch him.
Yeah.
If you try to text him or write him, he might get you maybe 4 days later.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how he likes it. That's fine. I'm selfish for his time. I'm going to try to pin him down and have a conversation. Yeah. I remember last time I saw Air, he came in for the Marine Corps birthday.
Yeah.
And I describe him as kind of like Crocodile Dundee when he went into the city.
Yeah.
He was walking across busy intersections, like there was with no care in the world, like just assuming that the cars were going to stop. He gave me a homemade knife because he saw that I was doing the wood carving stuff. So he made a knife. I think he'd like repurposed a kitchen knife, made a real nice blade out of it, and then wrapped the handle in 550 cord, something like that. But he gave that to me.
Nice.
Nice little scabbard for it. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, he drove down with me. He met at my house, and then we drove down to Philly together.
Yes.
Yeah, so we caught up a lot driving down, driving up, you know.
Yeah.
That was nice.
That's great.
Yeah. There's another guy out here I'm not sure if you know of, is Mike Pimento. You remember him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he lives the same thing. He's about 2 hours from me, but he loves the Red Sox. So he's always going to Red Sox games. And I met him there a couple of times. Like he'd get tickets, and then I'd grab tickets off the Veteran Tickets Foundation. And then we'd go there and hook up. We'd have a couple beers together and catch up there. And that's been great.
That's awesome. So where does he live?
He lives somewhere like out in Bedford, Mass.
Okay.
It's like an hour, maybe hour and a half past Boston.
Okay.
So for me to get to Boston is about 45 minutes to an hour. And then to get to Pimento's place is probably at least another hour, maybe hour and a half.
Okay. So. Well, good to have those guys close to you. You know, you can get together sometimes. That'd be cool.
I ran into Mike a few times at a couple of wrestling shows, some events at the TD Garden or at the Red Sox games. So every now and then I run into him, probably more than I do with Air.
Yeah.
But I talk to both of them pretty frequent.
That's good. It's important.
Yeah.
Back to the wrestling, if you had pursued it, did you give any thought to your signature moves?
It'd probably be the bear hug.
That'd be a signature. Your signature move would be the Italian tank bear hug.
Yeah.
Now you did the Rocky Run, right?
Yeah, I did it a few times.
So, cinematic portrayal, I'm big into this. When I think about the things that made me want to join the Marines, is in part, I wanted to be one of the good guys. I wanted to be a hero. And when I think about you with the Italian tank handle and the kind of the mystique about your wrestling enthusiasm, and I think I saw the picture with your daughter. It was you're wearing like a Captain America shirt, if you're not wearing the same something like that right now. You seem to be inspired by heroism. It's not hard to, it's not a stretch for us, for anybody to be inspired by that sort of thing, but like comic book heroes, superheroes. Did that play any role in you wanting to be a United States Marine?
Yeah, a big part of that growing up, because I hate to say it, but I came from a pretty bad, broken family. My dad is pretty much an asshole. And, you know, he cheated on my mom constantly. He beat her up. And I grew up to that violent. So I grew up knowing that, hey, I wanted to fight and protect my mom, protect my brothers and sisters. So I always kind of had that hero mentality. And the only thing that stuck out to me is being a Marine. You always see the commercials, you know, the few, the proud, the Marines. And I always looked at that as like, damn, if I could do that, I could be one ton tough son of a bitch. You know what I mean? And so growing up my whole life, I knew I always wanted to be a Marine. But of course, I was what they call a fat body. So they would always tell me, oh, you got to lose weight. You got to lose weight. So growing up, I was always a big stocky kid. I lift weights, this and that. And they wouldn't take me because of the weight. Well, after high school, I went right into being an armored truck driver. I drove an armored truck for a while. And I got held up twice being an armored truck driver.
Really?
Yeah, and I got through that. And after that, I was like, you know, I got held up twice. And this isn't even my money. It's a fucking bank's money. I was like, I don't give two shits if they get it or not. And I just said, you know what? If I'm going to do something I really want to do, and I said it was being a Marine, I said, if I don't do it now, I'm not going to do it. So I had moved to Florida. I had no job, no nothing. I was homeless for a while. Basically put my own self through training, lost weight, being in Florida, being hot, you know what I mean? So you could lose a weight, like, real quick. And I basically lived on a beach. I got real close with the recruiter down there and found out I was homeless. So when he found that out, he would, at the nighttime, when he'd shut his office at like 4 or 5 o'clock, he'd lock up. He'd open the back door, let me in. I'd sleep on his couch and stuff for the night. And then, like I said, I was losing weight. I finally got down to where he could give me a weight waiver. I got down to like 200 pounds. And then I was able to finally join the Marine Corps with a waiver. Knowing at boot camp, I'd lose the weight. And then that was it. I finally was able to join and follow my dream that way.
That's outstanding, dude. I didn't even know that.
It's tough. I had tough growing up. Yeah.
So that's phenomenal. That what a great story that you wanted to do that so badly that you were able to go down and, I mean, being homeless and realizing your goal, and that the recruiter helped you out, gave you a place to sleep.
Yeah, at that point, like I said, I was rock bottom. I was homeless. I had nowhere else to go, nothing else to do. So I said, if I don't do it now, it ain't going to happen.
So then you go to boot camp, and how was that? I mean, you obviously...
At that point, no matter what they threw at me, OB, which I didn't know what to expect. I figured it'd be hard, but I didn't expect all that shit. But I kept telling myself, no matter what they throw at me, it's not going to break me. I'm gonna get through it. And I had my hard times at boot camp. Like, I was still a fat body. So, of course, when you go through the chow line, I was what they call a fat body. So they would have to check my plate before I could eat it. So there were times a recruiter wouldn't come up and check my plate. And then everyone else, they'd get called out to get in line in formation to go back to the barracks. And I'm still there holding my plate. And I'm like, what the fuck? So there were times I had to drop my plate to where I didn't even eat and go back out.
Jeez.
Yeah. Up to a point where some of the guys were noticing that. Like, I'd go days without fucking eating. So they started, you know, sneaking a couple of things out for me and bringing it back to the barracks so I could eat. And I remember one day we got caught, and they were like, what the fuck's this child doing in the squad bay? Like, you know, they said, you stealing from the fucking chow hall now, blah, blah, blah. And then they'd send us out to the fucking sand pit. You remember that shit, right?
Hell yeah.
They send you out to the sand pit where you're doing all these exercises, rolling around like rugrats. And now you got sand all over you, sand in your ass crack and everything. And And then you go in and they say, all right, shower up. They turn the waters on for like 2 seconds. Or even that, they tell you, soap everyone up. Like you have to soap your buddy up or whatever. And they soap you up. And then they say, all right, shower's on. They turn the showers on for like 2 seconds. And now you're going to bed with fucking sand and soap and everything else in your crack ass. And good old times, right?
That's nasty. So what did they share that the reason why they were taking the food back was to help you sustain life or what?
No, they just looked at it like, you guys are stealing from the chow hall, you're fucking this and that. I mean, they probably knew why. But it was all, you know, it was all a game, and that was the shit we went through.
Oh, big time, man. Big time.
Yeah. And ooh. I think shortly after that, they were going to throw a blanket party on me once because I kept fucking some shit up, like with the drill. I could never get the drill right. And they were going to throw a blanket party on me once. And I think Sergeant Partimus at the time talked them out of it last minute. And he came and told me that. And I thanked him. He looked out for me, that's for sure.
That's great. Yeah, he was that type of guy, man. Just a good fucking dude.
Yeah, it came pretty close. Came pretty close to where I was going to get a blanket party.
I'm sure you would have put up a fight.
And for people that don't know what a blanket party is, they load up bars of soap on a fucking blanket and everyone comes around taking turns whacking you. So I was lucky I didn't get that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thank God.
Yeah.
How about hazing when we showed up at 1-6, man?
Yeah, hazing. Every time we showed up and then every time someone, if you get promoted, you walk down the halls of fame. Where they form two lines and you walk down the middle of it and everyone punches the shit out of you. Congratulates you on your fucking promotion.
Barry, what's some of the hardest training that you took part in while we served?
The hardest part was I'd say getting through boot camp. The two things I couldn't do right away was qualify at the rifle range and the swim call. The rifle range, I could never seem to hit the targets right. And I actually fell behind almost a week and a half to 2 weeks of boot camp. So I actually did like 15 or 16 weeks of boot camp because my original platoon that I got assigned to at boot camp, they moved on and I fell behind 1 week. And I had to redo the rifle range. And then I finally passed that. And then they're like, oh, you didn't pass your swim call. So they bumped me back another week so that I could go through the swim call again. And then I finally passed the swim call. And then I remember that there was a sergeant at the time called Staff Sergeant Smoot. I don't know if you ever heard of that name or familiar with him. He was a real prick. And he turned around afterwards. He looks at me and goes, Barry, you could shoot. Barry, you could swim. I suppose you think you're a fucking Marine now. I said, yes, sir. I said, yes, sir. And then that was it. Shortly after that, I graduated.
Awesome, dude. You made it through.
Yeah, but like I said, I didn't, no matter what, I said to myself, I'm going to do it, you know?
That's the spirit, bro. That's the Marine Corps work ethic. Now that's what you signed up for, and you pulled it off, so.
Yeah.
So, you get out, what is it, 97 then? You got out in 97 as well?
June of 97, yeah.
And so we're talking, you mentioned about the butchering. What is that like? Cut, what's the day in, day out of being a butcher?
Well, I'd start my morning usually about 4 a.m. Start breaking a load down of like 200, 300 pieces of meat. it comes in quarter boxes, and you start opening up and you start cutting, you know, your ribs, your strips, your loins, your steak tips. Basically, we'd have like a butcher shop, so we cut for the butcher shop first, all kinds of the meats, tenderloins, you know, your flank steaks and all that. We'd cut it all out by hand, set it up. And then we just start cutting for the meat case for, you know, regular customers to come in and grab their meat for the day. But, yeah, I used to work from 4 a.m. till about 1:30 in the afternoon. I love that schedule. I'd be home just in time for my daughter to get out of school. And like I said, I was able to spend a lot of time with her growing up and everything.
That's awesome, because as you were describing, you didn't have the best upbringing, you know?
No, so, I definitely knew that. And,
you're the dad that you didn't have.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Made sure she had a dad, and she still does, you know, nowadays it's a little harder. She's kind of her own, and she's more like, you know, with her friends, which is natural. But up until she was 13, I'd say I was with her, you know, 24/7, and we did everything and anything together. She got a lot of good memories, you know, and that's something I never had growing up. At least not good memories.
Mission accomplished, my bro.
Yeah.
You done well. You raised a good human being.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I mean, I gave her all the tools, and now it's up to her to function, and I'm sure she'll do well.
So
that's all we can ask for.
You said horror. She's into horror.
Yeah, a little of everything, but mainly the other night she told us she wanted to go into making horror films. So
that's pretty cool, man. It's an interesting genre. You see, do you like them as well?
I kind of like anything, really. I don't have a particular, if I like horror, action, love story movies, whatever. I'm a little of everything.
Yeah. There's this show, it's a series. I'm trying to think. Is it called Them or something like that? Holy shit, this is good. It's good. So there's two seasons. I think there's a third one that's inbound, but it was a really good series. Kind of suspenseful, not crazy horror, but I thought it was a good concept. And then there's I don't know if you saw The Haunting of Hill House. You see that series?
Nah.
The Haunting of Hill House. Well, anyway, well, I wish her luck. I hope she is the next Stephen King. Yeah?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. How about Mrs. Barry?
She does all right. She's a case manager. She works with case people, but lately she's been working with me, like the VA, since I got 100% disability now. So basically, they pay her to take care of me. She does well. She goes out. She takes care of herself. She likes doing her hair, her nails, the typical woman stuff. She likes going to a lot of stuff with me. We spend a lot of time together. We're, you know, like this morning, we had a nice breakfast, and then we'll go to shows together, and we just live a good life, you know? I really can't complain. Like, we have the best of both worlds. It's like, the kidney stuff is a disease, and it sucks. But in the other run, it's like a blessing, because I get to spend so much time with my wife and my kid, and I don't have to worry about the hustle and bustle. I'm pretty well taken care of, you know, through the military disability and my Social Security. I can't complain. So, and a lot of other people, they have it hard where, you know, they can't pay their bills or working paycheck to paycheck. And where I'm pretty fortunate, I don't have to worry about any of that. I'm pretty good. I'm content. I'm comfortable. And I honestly could say I live a good life, you know? And you can't ask for much more than that. I mean, despite, yeah, I'm in pain a lot, and, you know, my back hurts, and I had two ankle surgeries done, and I can't walk much. But And the other term, like I said, I don't let the negativity keep me down to where I think about the pain or let it keep me from living a good life.
Good. Yeah, you seem to have a really refreshing, positive mental attitude there, Barry. And it's not, I think it seems, as long as I've known you, you've been that way. I remember our last encounters at the Marine Corps birthday. We would kind of pal around. We're riding bikes around Philly.
Yeah, I remember that.
Everybody else, I mean, not everybody, but many of the others were either sightseeing or they're in a bar already. And we were like, man, I can't do that another night. You couldn't do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, especially with kidney failure, I can't drink like that. And that's where I stepped up in another way too, because I felt bad not hanging out with the guys and going pound for pound, drink for drink. So in return, I would tell them, okay, so I'm not buying drinks and sharing it like everyone else. So I would just pick up the tab for the hotel, you know, when we go there. And everyone stayed in the hotel and stuff. I would just pay the hotel fee for everyone. And to me, that was my way of saying, hey, drinks were on me that, you know, I paid for the hotels, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't want to be left out saying, oh, I didn't contribute anything, or, oh, I wasn't around to share drinks, you know? But it was a good time just being with everyone. It was a great time being with you. Like you said, we rode bikes and we toured the city a little bit. We went to that one place where they had everything in there, and we got a dessert together.
Yeah, we had some good times, man. That was time.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll definitely great times, and I hope we could all do it again soon. I mean,
you are, man. You saw that they're rebuilding Tun Tavern?
Yeah, I saw the notice of that. I'd like to go back and see that. That would be wonderful.
That's what we're going to do. That's 2025, so maybe we should and hopefully that comes to fruition. But that would be awesome, right? They get an actual authentic friggin' Tun Tavern down in Old City.
Definitely.
Be a great place for us all to link up. So it's cool.
Yeah.
All right, Barry. Well, I've got one last question for you, my friend. What does Semper Fidelis mean to you?
Semper Fidelis means to me always faithful and truthful to yourself and to your brothers and to the world. You see something happening, you know it's wrong, step up, you be true. And always be the right thing and the right man to do it. Don't be shy and don't be bashful. If you know it's wrong and correct it.
I love it, man. Truer words were never said there, Alfred Barry, the Italian Tank, my friends. I appreciate my time with you today. We're going to connect at a future date. Maybe we get a bunch of guys together and we'll get Wally on the podcast and tell some stories. And that'd be great.
Oh, yeah.
I love you.
You too, Obers. Thanks for reaching out and thanks for doing this with me.
Of course. Now, one last thing, dude. What is the name of that organization that you can get like veterans tickets for events?
It's the veteransticketfoundation.com. You just log in, and if you're not a member, it's pretty easy to sign up. It's free. And then after that, you just every now and then, if you see a show coming up in your area, you log on, and chances are it's on there. And you get tickets. I think the most you pay is like $14 for four tickets.
Holy shit.
So, hey. And basically the tickets are free. All you're paying for is a service fee. Everyone has a service fee these days. And the service fee actually goes back to the Veterans Ticket Foundation so that they can put it in the pot to get more tickets. That's all that really is. So it kind of goes full circle with that.
That's outstanding. Now, you know, what's the highest profile band that you saw with that?
I saw Guns N' Roses.
Badass.
Yeah, they were at Fenway Park and Gillette Stadium. I saw them at least 2-3 times. The last show I went to was at, in Boston. I actually saw Andrew Dice Clay. I don't know if you remember him from the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I saw him. And every time I go, the tickets are great. Great seats. So
that's awesome, dude. I was just thinking, yeah, you know, that'd be great. I mean, I just wonder if it was like high-ish profile, like fucking Taylor Swift or the Rolling Stones or something like that.
Yeah, we actually saw Taylor Swift probably 5 years ago, right before the pandemic and shit. I guess maybe before she was really popular now.
Yeah.
But she was at Fenway Park and we got tickets to her. I didn't like her, but my daughter did.
Yeah, I don't like her either. I'm asking for my daughter, yeah.
Yeah, so like I said, we got 4 tickets. I paid $14. And we were sitting like 5 rows from the stage.
Damn.
It was crazy. And then sure enough, the second time she come around, you know, tickets were crazy. People were spending $2,000-$3,000 a ticket. So of course they weren't on the vet ticks then, but but I did see her first time around, which is cool.
We'll take what we can get, Tank.
Yeah, that's all I do. I look on there, and like I said, even if I don't like it, it's a country show or what, I don't care for country much, but to me, I look at it, hey, if I could go see a show, I'd see a show than rather be sitting at home on my couch.
Right.
So I just look at it, you know, my wife and I will go out, we'll get a nice dinner, we'll go see a nice show, and we're out for a few hours, and that's it. That's part of living. You'd rather do that than stay home, you know?
Yeah, big time.
So I don't care what show I go to. You can't beat it when you're only paying $14.
That's great, dude. For again, Veterans Ticket Foundation. I'll post that on this.
Definitely.
Share it because that's a great thing. I think a lot of veterans would appreciate that. So.
Oh yeah.
All right, yeah. Man. Semper Fi to you. I love you like a brother, and I'll talk to you soon, Devil.
Semper Fi to you too, Oberst. I love you too, brother.
Take care.
Nice talking.